How to have fun, anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starr.
Hello, everybody. I hope you're doing well today. Todd Starnes here with you live from our broadcast studios in beautiful Memphis, Tennessee. Broadcasting border to border, coast to coast, across the Great Fruited Plain. So, look, Grandmother Starnes, we affectionately called her Meemaw. Meemaw once said this, and she pretty much lived her life by this this philosophy. If you can't say something nice about somebody, you be best just hush up. That's the best way to do it. And I pretty much, I haven't made that a policy on my radio program, but I also do not speak ill of the dead. And I want to wade into this whole Jimmy Carter thing for just a few moments because I have a few thoughts on this. And I found it fascinating that conservatives of a certain generation, and by that I mean young people that are in their teens and their 20s and their 30s, they actually revere this guy. They think that Jimmy Carter is a good guy because Jimmy Carter went out there and he wore blue jeans and he built houses and was helping his neighbors and did all sorts of good deeds. And I'm not taking any of that away from Jimmy Carter. The guy lived to be 100 years old. He served his nation in the military with honor and distinction. He was a Navy veteran. He was a brilliant guy, graduated from Georgia Tech, got married to the same woman for 77 years, and was faithful in his marriage vows. The kids were sort of a mixed bag, but you know, what are you going to do? And he spent his twilight years teaching Sunday school and building houses for the less fortunate. And as near as I can tell, he and his wife actually, after the presidency, they moved back to Plains, Georgia, and they lived in the same house that they moved into after they got married. And he lived there until he died. So if he was making profit off of the presidency, I didn't see it. I don't think he did. And every single one of those things that I just mentioned is pretty darn admirable. It really is. But can we talk about the presidency for a moment? Because, again, we don't speak ill of the dead, but we don't canonize them as saints either. And it's pretty clear to me that up until Joe Biden, Jimmy Carter had the distinction of having the worst presidency in all of American history. I mean, and that is saying something. Now, of course, he is the second worst president in all of American history. But this guy's presidency was a complete disaster. And the young people, gather them around the radio here, folks, and we're going to try to educate these kids. First of all, this idea that, and I know everybody's going through revisionist history, but even the Democrats hated Jimmy Carter. And I want to explain how he got elected, because it's a fascinating story. Jimmy Carter was the governor of Georgia, and he was a peanut farmer, and the guy, look, he was a businessman, and he was doing very well for himself. Jimmy Carter was always a liberal, but when he ran to be governor of Georgia, he ran as a pro-segregationist. He was all about keeping blacks in their place. And then when he got, that's how he campaigned to get elected. And when he got elected, he immediately, during his inaugural address, actually said, gotcha, fooled you. So he completely fooled the electorate there in Georgia. And as a result of that, after his term was over, he decided that he wanted to try to do something on the national stage. And the reason why Jimmy Carter won is, and at the time, nobody knew who this guy was. And many of you around, many of you old timers might remember the slogan, Jimmy who? Jimmy who? Nobody knew who this guy was. That was the campaign slogan. Jimmy Carter. Jimmy who? Who are you talking about? So anyway, Jimmy Carter was out there, and he was campaigning. They call it, what, the Peanut Brigade or something. There was some sort of a peanut thing because he's a peanut farmer. So he goes out there, and the media loves this guy. And the reason why, because Plains, Georgia is kind of like, the Dukes of Hazzard, right? And you got all these zany characters down there, people like his mother, many of you might remember Miss Lillian. And of course, then there was the brother who was Billy Carter, who was a kind of a rogue kind of a guy, had the gas station and loved to drink beer. Many of you might have consumed Billy Beer. Maybe you remember Billy Beer back in the day. So anyway, he had these lovable characters, fun characters. The mom, Miss Lillian, she was quite the character. As a matter of fact, back in the day, she actually said, this is one of her quotes, "Sometimes when I look at my children, I say to myself, Lillian, you should have remained a virgin." So she was like one of these very outspoken Southern women. And people loved her. They loved the whole back and forth. Now, keep in mind, we were coming out of a situation where you had the Vietnam War, which was finally ending. You had Watergate. Nobody trusted anybody in Washington. And Jimmy Carter came up on the scene and he says, "I'm a born-again Christian and I will never lie to you." That's what he promised the American people. And the media jumped on this. And they're the ones, they're the ones that got this guy elected to the presidency. And when you look at the, and I remember this, and I'm curious to hear from our listeners on this. I was, at that time, we had moved out of Memphis to the suburb, the small town of South Haven, Mississippi. And I remember my dad on election night, and even as a young kid, and I was, oh gosh, maybe I was like 9 years old, 8 or 9 years old when Carter won. And I remember this like it was yesterday. I was just a weird kid. I remembered the Watergate hearings, all of that stuff. And I was watching my dad, and he had all of his buddies over. And these are just good old Southern guys. And for the first time in their lifetime, there was a guy from the South that was running to be president. And there was, and I think this was sort of the train of thought across the entire South, is that one of our guys has got a shot at this. He spoke our language. He knew who we were. He went to church. And that was a big thing with Jimmy Carter. He wore his religion on his sleeve. This whole born again Christian thing. And the people in the South, they rushed out and they voted. And black voters, as a matter of fact, had it not been for the black voters going out and voting for Mr. Jimmy, as everybody in the South called him, if they had not have gotten out there and voted for Mr. Jimmy, then Gerald Ford would have been president of the United States. But I'll never forget the look on my dad's face. He was so excited. And they were celebrating. I think they were drinking Billy beer. They were so excited when Jimmy Carter won. That turned out to be the last time my dad ever voted for a Democrat. As a matter of fact, that was the last time anybody in the Southern states voted for a Democrat. And all you have to do is take a look at the electoral votes on election. Jimmy Carter carried the entire South, but when he ran for re-election, he lost the entire South. It was brutal. And why is that? Because this man was not a good politician. As a matter of fact, Jimmy Carter, the Democrats hated the guy. And the reason why is Jimmy Carter did away with all the pomp, all the circumstance. He refused to let the band play Hail to the Chief. People were really irate about this. And it was really this idea of turning the White House into this middle class kind of a community, as opposed to elevating the Oval Office. Jimmy Carter actually refused to work with his own party on Capitol Hill. It was his way or the highway. I'm curious, how many of you remember the gas lines, the fuel shortages? How many of you folks remember those days? How many of you remember sitting in the car with your mom, your dad, waiting for over an hour just to get a gallon of gasoline? I remember those times. We had a blue Oldsmobile. That thing was like a tank. How many of you remember when Jimmy Carter came out in those sweaters with the fireplace roaring at the White House? How many of you remember when he told Americans in the dead of winter, hey, look, you're going to have to turn your thermostat down to 55 degrees. You've got to conserve energy. How many of you remember that? How many of you remember that it was Jimmy Carter who gave away the Panama Canal? Or what about his insane foreign policies that led to the Iranian hostage crisis? It was so bad in this country. They actually, it was Jimmy Carter himself who said that we have a crisis of confidence. Yes, the crisis of confidence was coming from the Oval Office. Jimmy Carter fooled everybody. This guy was the worst president, but I will say that his greatest political achievement was actually to usher in the Reagan Revolution. There was a phrase, malaise had just taken over the country. People were in a desperate spot. Well, thanks to Ronald Reagan, malaise gave way to mourning in America. So on that note, thank you, President Carter. Thank you, because your presidency was so horrible, you nearly destroyed the nation. But because of your actions, we got Ronald Reagan. Thank you, Mr. Carter. May you rest in peace. We're going to go to the phone lines. I'm curious if any of you remember those days. And look, the media, they're going to be whitewashing all of this. But you got to, if you're going to talk about the man, you got to talk about the good. You got to talk about the bad and the ugly. By the way, it was Jimmy Carter. He was the first man to embrace the LGBT agenda and first president to welcome those folks into the White House. And by the way, Jimmy Carter was not pro-life either. 901-260-5926. Phone's already lighting up. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. You know, we talk about what's happening with the economy. And I want to encourage you as you go into 2025 to take a long, hard look at where your money is invested. And if it's all in the stock market, you need to think about that really hard. My recommendation is to diversify your retirement plan, your savings, whatever you're trying to do. You need to diversify into physical gold, silver, and platinum. And that's why my friends at Priority Gold are really, really anxious to talk to you. Priority Gold, they make it very easy to diversify. You got to act now, though, and this is not some sort of a pressure thing. They just want to send you a free gold investor guide. They've got two decades of experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and they want to send you a free gold investor guide. Now, folks, if you're following the numbers, gold already up 21% this year and still climbing. And so this is a great opportunity to take a long, hard look at your retirement plans. By the way, if you're a young person, maybe you just got some Christmas money, might be a good idea for you to take a look at investing in gold as well. So here's what I want you to do. Write this number down. Text the word GOLDEN to 24999. That's GOLDEN to 24999. You're going to get a free gold investor guide, and it's not going to be a pressure sale here, folks. That's not how Priority Gold operates. They want to educate you first, and then you can make a smart decision. So again, text the word GOLDEN to 24999.
The extremely cold weather this winter has dangerously depleted our supplies of natural gas and fuel oil and forced hundreds of thousands of workers off the job. I realize that many of you have not believed that we really have an energy problem, but this winter has made all of us realize that we have to act. Utility companies must promote conservation and not consumption. We'll ask private companies to sacrifice, just as private citizens must do. All of us must learn to waste less energy. Simply by keeping our thermostats, for instance, at 65 degrees in the daytime and 55 degrees at night, we could save half the current shortage of natural gas. There's no way that I or anyone else in the government can solve our energy problems if you are not willing to help. I know that we can meet this energy challenge if the burden is borne fairly among all our people, and if we realize that in order to solve our energy problems, we need not sacrifice the quality of our lives.
Oh, my Lord. Can you imagine 4 years of that coming out of your TV screen and your radio? 4 years of that. And by the way, the worst part is that Jimmy Carter banned alcohol from being served in the White House. Oh, geez, Lou. No wonder everybody hated the guy's guts. Let's go to the phone lines here, 901-260-5926. Let's start in Lakeland, Tennessee. Jim is listening to us on KWAM. Jim, do you remember those days?
Oh, do I? I was 26 years old, and I remember they also, if I'm not mistaken, lowered the speed limit on the expressway to 55.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. And, you know, gas, I remember standing in line because I had a high-performance car that my dad had bought me and for years when I was in high school. And, man, I remember I was having to fill that thing up about every other day. gas and interest rates went through the roof.
Oh, it was terrible. And I was just a little fella then, back in the day. And to your point, by the way, you are correct. President Carter did, in fact, approve the new federal standard of 55 miles an hour for the speed limit.
Mm-hmm. And then I remember the truckers were all raising all kind of cane because they said that they couldn't make money driving at that speed and all that stuff. I remember, man, that was. And then my first house that I bought, I financed it at a 14% interest rate.
14%?
14%. Sure did, and I had a clause in there where I could refinance it at any given time, and then a couple of years later, I ended up refinancing the thing after some interest rates started, Reagan got in there, and I turned around and ended up refinancing 7.
Jim?
And then later on, I sold it, you know.
Jim, were you one of those guys, like, my dad was just, he was... just a pretty much a yellow dog Democrat, but he was a Southern conservative Democrat. That all ended after Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, that pretty much did. I do know that I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote at all that year. And when he was elected, and I said, you know, the next time after all the gas went crazy and everything, I said, you know, I'll vote in the next one. And my first time to ever vote was voted for Reagan.
It was a electoral college landslide. That's how massive it was. It was pretty impressive. Ronald Reagan came in, and the entire country said, "Okay, we're done here. Crank up the thermostat."
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know anybody that would be in a house at 55 degrees, because there's a lot of probably people that would love to have 55 degrees that are on the street and everything. But the trouble is, man, it was kind of brutal time at that time, because, as I say, the oil prices went crazy. I think it was like $100 a barrel or something like that. And, it was unreal. And then lowering the speed limit and the interest rates, it was just a turmoil, you know.
And, Jim, and then just the sucker punch was the Iranian hostage crisis. And every single day, you know, watching our fellow citizens being marched through the streets, blindfolded, and... You know, Jimmy Carter did nothing. It's appalling.
Well, one thing I remember, and I'm not sure if it was Carter or not, but I remember that one poor soldier being drugged through the street, you know, That vision is still in my head. I can't exactly when that
happened. Was Bill Clinton. But, that was, I believe, Mogadishu, and that was Bill Clinton's administration.
Yeah, and they, and Carter, you know, and when Reagan said, he said, you'll release these hostages by the time I'm elected or I'm coming to get them. And after that, it won.
And they sure did.
They released them real quick.
Jim, got to run. 901-260-5926, our telephone line. If you want to get in on the show today, that's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. The story of MyPillow is a testament to faith and transformation. Mike Lindell, once battling addiction, found a new path when he embraced faith and began following Jesus. In gratitude, Mike is excited to share an exclusive offer with our listeners. Right now, the standard MyPillow is available for just $14.88, a savings that's too good to pass up. There's a limit of 10 per customer, so don't wait to take advantage of this amazing deal now with promo code STARNS. Mike believes God gave him the idea for MyPillow in a dream, and it's designed with your comfort in mind. The pillow holds its shape and adapts perfectly to your unique sleep position, helping keep your neck aligned for the best night's sleep. And there's more. Take home a four-piece kitchen set for only $25. Enjoy the new mattress topper at $99.99 or pick up the luxurious MyPillow bed sheet starting at $49.98. Visit MyPillow.com or call 800-839-8506 and use promo code STARNS to unlock huge discounts. Don't miss out. Order today. I'm serious about this race thing. It's a story that a lot of people don't know about. Jimmy Carter, James Earl Carter. Call me Jimmy. Jimmy Carter. And in 1970, when he was running for governor, there was a liberal former governor by the name of Carl Sanders. Our WDUN listeners know all about this history here. But you had a former liberal governor, Carl Sanders. So Jimmy Carter, when he was running in the Democrat primary, decided to run a more modern campaign and tried to be conservative. So Carter positioned himself as a populist and blasted Sanders because he was a rich guy. And he also, Jimmy Carter, was really, he was sneaky because he needed the black vote, but he also needed the white vote, and he especially embraced prominent Alabama segregationist George Wallace. Remember standing in the door, refused to let the kids into the schoolhouse? Remember that, George Wallace? And so Jimmy Carter would meet with people like Martin Luther King Sr. and Andrew Young, but he also praised George Wallace and invited George Wallace to Georgia to deliver a speech. They even... And this is nasty. Talk about dirty politics. Jimmy Carter's campaign handed out photographs of his opponent celebrating with black basketball players. That's Jimmy Carter, by the way. According to some reports, Carter's appeal to racism grew, and he actually criticized his opponent for supporting Martin Luther King Jr. Carter won the runoff election with 60% of the vote, won the general election against the Republican, and immediately changed his tone and began to speak against racism. So a black state senator by the name of Leroy Jackson said this about Jimmy Carter. This is the quote. I understand why he ran that kind of ultra-conservative campaign. I don't believe you can win this state without being a racist. There you go. All right, I know a lot of you folks are wanting to weigh in on this. Let's go to the phone lines. Roger in Maine, listening to us on WLOB. Hi, Roger. What's on your mind?
Hi, Todd. I hope you had a good Christmas. It's great to be here. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that when Carter was in and the gas crunch started, I was like 12 years old, and I was working at a Texaco station. I remember the day well when the prices went from, I believe it was 32 cents a gallon up to 74 cents a gallon for Sky Chief and Fire Chief. And boy, did that create havoc in the world. I remember my dad had just bought a new Buick station wagon, and he was fit to be tied because of the gas price.
Oh, there were a lot of people. If you remember, Roger, there were a lot of people that were the guys, the men of the family would ride a bicycle to work because it was just, you know, they couldn't get gas. I mean, it was insane what was happening in this country. And you know, I think they called it malaise. And it's really true. I mean, there really was a it was a despondent time to be an American citizen.
The best thing that came out of the Carter administration and just our time with him as president was his brother Billy and Billy Beer.
Now, I liked old Billy, and I liked Miss Lillian. She was a spitfire, and they were worth some pretty darn good sound bites back in the day.
You bet.
All right.
Anyway, Todd, I have to go. All the best. God love you. We'll see you soon.
Roger, God bless you. And by the way, I want to say this real quick to all of our WLOB listeners. So our show is ending on your radio station. The new owners of the station have decided to go in a different direction. And so we will, I think tomorrow is our last day on WLOB. So, Dylan, we will make sure that WLOB listeners, we fill up our lines with them so we can say farewell. We love our good friend Ray Richardson and the great people there in Portland. It's the only radio station we've ever lost in all of our years of doing this. But who knows? One day we might be back on in the great state of Maine. But we will certainly miss all of our WLOB listeners, and Godspeed to you. All right, let's get right back to the phone lines here. Let's go to Patty in North Carolina, WSIC. Patty, I understand you have a funny story about the gas lines.
Yes, I had a car. My dad, I had a Ford Pinto. You know, the car where you hit the back, you would die. Remember that?
I do remember.
I think my father had an insurance policy out on me. I'm not kidding. But anyway, so I had a car. Mom had a car. Dad had a car. We had the odds and evens on the license plate where you go and get gas on an odd day. You go and get gas on an even day.
I do remember that, yes.
Yes, it was odds and evens. And so you would, yeah, if you had odd numbers, you can get your dollar gas that day.
And it had to do with your driver. It had to do with your license plate, right? So
Yeah. It had to do with your license plate. If you had an odd not odd numbers on your license plate, you can get it on.
Patty, Dylan is like, there's no way this happened in America. No, it really did.
Yes, it did. It did. No, this is a true story. I was 18, and you know what? I voted for them. I'm not going to even go. You know, I voted for him.
Well, yeah, a lot of people did because he was a Southerner. You know, that's, I mean,
yeah,
we were.
Because he had that smile, remember?
Oh, and the
Todd,
teeth.
What was he famous for saying? I lost it in my heart.
Oh, yeah, he did the interview with Playboy, and I think they asked him about being faithful, and he said, I lusted in my heart. I have lusted after women in my heart. And I don't think anybody really understood. I'm not even sure I understood that.
He was looking at some good-looking girl. He never cheated on Rosalind, but he was thinking about it.
Well, this is true. And so, again, I guess he thought that was a sin, I guess, looking at a good-looking woman.
And I know something, but you know what my father did, though? My father, you know, I come from a Sicilian family. We weren't stupid. And my father did, you know what he did? Because, you know, my mom was working. I grew up in a family where I had both parents working. I had a good life, Todd, I got to say. Thank God, Mom and Dad. And you know what? I'll tell you right now. My father, he would change the license plate.
No, he did not. So you get gas?
He changed the license plate on the course.
Wow.
It was crazy. He said, okay, Barbara, this license plate's going on Patty's car. Patty, my license, your plate's going on my car. I'm not kidding.
Patty, I remember this. This was 1976 when Jimmy Carter did the Playboy interview, and he said that he admitted to feelings of lust and adultery in his heart, and that actually almost cost him the presidency, but he said many times, so it wasn't just like one time. So it was all the time. So you have to wonder if Rosalind Carter, if she was, she had him on a short leash.
Oh, well, you know, look at them. I mean, they did last for how many years?
77 years. 77 years.
Yeah.
What a relationship.
Awesome.
What a marriage.
But I got to say one more thing before I go. Let me tell you something. What my father got so mad at was the Iranian hostage crisis. That's what my father said. That is it for this man. Okay? That is it. Mm. And he just he got killed. He got killed through Reagan, right?
That's true. Patty, good hearing from you. Happy New Year to you.
Same here, bud.
All right. Great lady. WSIC, great radio station, too. Let's go to Claude in Georgia, WDUN. Claude, I'm curious, because it's got to be mixed emotions there in the state of Georgia, because he was, you know, a son of the great state of Georgia.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I thought a lot of it myself, but I want to weigh in on the gas line thing and stuff. I pulled a gas tanker for 13 years, and I got to knowing people that ran the big tank farms. All the tanks were full of gas. They just wouldn't let nobody have it.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, pipeline, and call them, tell them we got pipe stuff coming up pipeline, and we ain't got nowhere to put it. So we're going to find somewhere.
Wow. Again, I just don't think Gen Zers, they're never going to be able to understand, you know, what it was like back then. But I'm telling you, there are so many comparisons, Claude, to what happened in the 1970s that led to Ronald Reagan and what happened today with Joe Biden and what's about to happen with Donald Trump. And, of course, it was Ronald Reagan who promised that he was going to make America great again. That was Ronald Reagan's. That was his battle cry back in that election cycle. And it turned out that the American people said, yeah, what, just you gotta help us here. And everybody voted Republican.
That's right.
All right, Claude, thank you for that. And thank you for calling in. You know, I will say this on the human side. I actually interviewed President Carter. And I found him to be very kind man. I found him to be a gracious and very forthcoming. I thought it was a pretty interesting interview. He and his wife would also travel to the North Georgia Mountains. Many of our listeners, I know our good friend Joe from LJ, the Carters actually had a cabin up there in the North Georgia Mountains. And in the summertime, they would come up, and when they were there, they would visit the church my parents attended, the First Baptist Church in LJ, Georgia. And if there was ever a dinner on the ground or something, if they were there, they would participate. And we always thought it was really interesting to watch. It's not a very large church, and I would be home, and my parents would be there, and sure enough, there would President Carter would walk in. And with the Secret Service detail, and they would all sit there, I think, on the front row of the sanctuary. And again, it's a very small church. But anyway, I write about this in our Daily Biscuit, the devotion book. My mom was known for being an incredible cook. She was she was Paula Deen level cook. And she was especially known for her potato salad. So anyway, they were doing the whole dinner on the grounds, and the Carters were there. And they decided to stick around, and they ate my mom's potato salad. And like any red-blooded American citizen, they loved that potato salad. And from that day on, anytime we had some sort of a church event, it was a mandate that they called it Mom's Presidential Potato Salad, had to be present there. So all that to say that when you shove all the politics aside, here's a guy that was faithful to his wife for 77 years. He ran a business, took care of his family, lived in the same house. I mean, he was not I would say he's a pretty frugal guy. He didn't go out on the big lecture circuit. You may, again, completely disagree with his politics, but at his heart, you know, he was living his life the way he felt like God wanted him to live his life. Let's go to Charles in North Carolina, WSIC. So, Charles, what say you?
Well, Todd, you're taking me back down memory lane because politically I came of age during Jimmy Carter's presidency. And I remember all of that. Todd, I can remember when I first got a car. It was a 1978 F-100 pickup. And gas was 75 cents a gallon. And then I was making $2.10 an hour. And the next summer, gas went to $1.50. So a gallon of gasoline represented more than 50% of what I was making. It'd be like gas being $7.50 a gallon today. And I just remember that summer, I don't think my gas tank got above a quarter of a tank. Whenever me and my friends would go out, they'd give me a dollar, one person there. And you could only put a little bit of gas in there, and it got 12 miles a gallon. So pretty much all you could do was park. But and then there was that hostage crisis in November of 79. And I remember watching ABC World News Tonight, day one, day three. And, yeah, we thought maybe it'd last maybe a month. And then pretty soon it's day 444. And then there was that disaster in 1980 when those Marines were killed in Desert One. A lot of people forget about that. And that was because Jimmy Carter tried to jump in there and micromanage that thing. He was worried. He didn't want specific students to be killed that might be there when the Marines were going to rescue the hostages. But inflation in 1980 got to 18%, and interest rates were 20%, Todd. I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible time. And that's the reason I voted for Ronald Reagan. And I remember the night Reagan won, I was a freshman in college, and people were coming out of the dorm rooms just yelling and screaming, that they were glad that Carter was finally.
Charles, it reminded me, it's on election night in November, and just the enthusiasm we saw on college campuses and on the high school campuses, that was the same kind of reaction we saw when Reagan was elected.
Exactly. And I told a lot of people this year that 2024 reminded me a lot of 1980.
But I think we lost Charles there. Charles, do we have you back?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. You were a little garbled, but you're good now.
Yeah. I was going to say, as bad a president as Carter was, it's nothing compared to Joe Biden. At least, Jimmy Carter was a good, decent man. But Joe Biden, he's just corrupt. I still don't even think he was elected president. And while he served as president, he certainly wasn't in charge. He's not in charge now. But it's just nothing compared to what it was, But Jimmy Carter, at least he no longer has the distinction of being the nation's worst president.
This is true. Right. He's second best. He's second worst. Second worst. Charles, got to run, my friend. We're late for a break. Thank you for calling in. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Hi, everyone. Tom Mustin here for the Legal Help Center. If you or someone you know were diagnosed with lung cancer or mesothelioma, listen up. This could be the result of asbestos exposure, and you could be entitled to significant compensation. Call us at 800-304-4700. That's 800-304-4700. To find out if you qualify for a cash settlement, we have legal professionals standing by right now to take your call, and they'll tell you if you qualify. The call is free. The consultation is free, and you'll speak with a live agent right now. So, if you or someone you know were diagnosed with lung cancer or mesothelioma, call right now to find out if you qualify for a cash settlement. Call us at 800-304-4700. That's 800-304-4700 to see how much money you could potentially get. Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center. May not be available in all states.
Bam, 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 I ran. Bam, 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 I ran.
Oh, my gosh.
Went to a mosque, gonna throw some rocks. Tell the Ayatollah, gonna put you in a box. Bam, I ran.
All right. Anybody remember that song back in the day? It was an older song called Barbara Ann, but they had one of these novelty pop groups. Vince Vance and the Valiants, and they actually put this song together. Everybody was singing this song. And Dylan, I know this is crazy. We didn't have like the cool headphones anymore. You know what we did? We had we had like the boom boxes, and you'd be walking around with the boom box on your shoulder blasting it.
Blasting Bomb Iran on the boom box.
Oh, it's literally walking
visual.
Down the, people were loving it. Real quick, let's go to Paul in Morehead City, North Carolina. Paul, you remember that Bomb Iran?
I do, sir. I do quite well. I'm going to be short and to the point, very, very brief. Jimmy Carter was a good man. He was a nice man. He just was not a knife fighter, and we needed a knife fighter in the presidency. Iran knew he was not a knife fighter, and that's the reason they abused us the way they did with taking our hostages. One of your previous callers mentioned the terrible tragedy of the attempted rescue. Jimmy Carter did micromanage that, and it was held off until the worst possible time weather-wise.
Yeah.
That time of the year was highly given to windstorms, sandstorms, and that was one of the things that was affected.
Operation Eagle Claw is what it was. And you're right, Paul, he micromanaged it, and look what happened. Paul, I got to run. Thank you for calling in, though. Folks, 901-260-5926. We got a story coming out of Texas that is going to blow your mind coming up. We'll be right back, America.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the increasing cost of health insurance? Have you had enough of not having control over your healthcare dollars? Introducing ShareRight, healthcare done the right way. At ShareRight, you're not just a number. You're part of a caring community. And forget about paying excessive premiums. With ShareRight, you can save 30 to 50% compared to health insurance. Think about what you could do with all those savings. But it's more than just savings. ShareRight ensures that you have access to the care you deserve, precisely when you need it. From routine checkups to unexpected emergencies, with ShareRight, your healthcare is our top priority. Empower yourself today by taking control of your healthcare costs. Visit joinshareright.org to learn more and see how much you can save. Visit joinshareright.org for healthcare done the right way. That's joinshareright.org. ShareRight is a program of IHS, one of the fastest growing healthcare sharing organizations in the country.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
All right, well, hello everybody. Happy New Year's Eve to you, I suppose. I hope you're doing well today, wherever you might be across this great nation. We have got a lot to talk about. A lot of political news happening, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But a story dropped in my lap over the weekend, and I was just absolutely stunned that that this had happened. And it involves a museum, a modern art museum in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, I want to bring into the conversation Scott Coulter, who is with the Danbury Institute. And they're the ones that have exposed this disgusting story and this brand new exhibit that people are calling child pornography. Scott, good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Todd. So glad to be here. Appreciate all that you do and stand for. You bet.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the Fort Worth Modern Museum of Art. What exactly are they doing that has raised your concerns?
Well, like you, we didn't know about this until very recently. We actually first learned of it on Christmas Day, and this is not the news you want to find out on Christmas, of course, but they have brought a display into their museum, the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, that's entitled Diaries of a Home, and it includes multiple photographs of fully nude, fully naked children, underaged, pre-adolescent, prepubescent children, under the guise of art, and we heard about this. A local newspaper in Dallas covered it briefly. We heard about it from some people at churches in our area here, and frankly could not believe it. So Thursday, we did a little bit more research last week, and Friday, I actually drove across the Metroplex to Fort Worth and visited this myself to see if this is truly what's taking place there. And what we found was even worse than what had been described previously. Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, we have seen pictures. I wish I had not But yes. They're saying this is artwork, but by your, in your estimation, this is not artistic.
There's nothing artistic about it. This is absolutely leftism and liberalism creeping into our culture. It's evil. It's reprehensible. It's preying upon and exploiting the most vulnerable and innocent children among us. There's nothing artistic about this. It's voyeurism, and it's attempting to profit off of exploiting those who are innocent and cannot defend themselves. As a husband, as a father, as a Christian, as a parent of a young daughter myself, we have no choice but to stand up against this. This was a very easy decision, absolutely.
So the museum is actually promoting the exhibit, and this is, again, in Fort Worth, Texas, promoting the exhibit as works created by women and non-binary artists that tackle dynamics of both biological and something called constructed families. That is a new term for me, Scott Coulter. Any idea what constructed families is all about?
Well, I could only guess from having been there and seen it. This is all under the headline of Diaries of a Home, talking about families, but it's the opposite of what a family is, what the Bible describes a family as being. And so not only are there these pictures of children in not normal ways, but in what they describe as solicitous ways and salacious ways, very, very inappropriate there. But there's also this entire breakdown of parental structures with parents that are non-binary, that don't claim a gender, and talk about not being able to be called mother or father, but being called Perry as a short term for parent that claim no gender, with a homosexual relationship. This would be a female in a homosexual relationship with another female, working through IVF to try and raise a child. So it's seeking to intentionally break down emotionally any understanding of what we have of a nuclear family unit, and to describe family as anything you want it to be, which of course is incorrect. So there's an entire other darkness to this exhibit. There's adult nudity as well, full frontal adult nudity, as well as that of children. So really just a perverse display, on display in one of our more conservative cities in the country.
Yeah, that's what I don't get, is that Fort Worth is a pretty conservative town. And again, if adults are nude or whatever, topless, okay, that's one thing. But when you've got children that are naked and they're being posed in sexually suggestive poses, that to me is almost an attempt to normalize pedophilia. That's what this sounds like to me.
It absolutely is. And I would say to your listeners, there is no age restriction on this. I walked into the museum. They're not checking any ages. They're not checking on who's going in or even letting them know what's ahead. There's a very small sign that said this contains mature content, and there were children walking around viewing this. There were adults, elderly couples all around looking at this. One of the pictures that was absolutely most vile and evil to me was one of a girl younger than my own daughter. She must have been 2 or 3 in this photo, completely exposed, totally naked from head to toe, asleep. Not awake, not even aware of what was happening to her, fully exposed, her genitalia on display in a bed, in a pool of what was described as urine. The title of that picture was entitled Wet the Bed. To a pedophile and to a pervert that could walk into this and for free look at an image that would be illegal to take a picture of, from my understanding, and possess on your phone, and would even include jail sentences and crime statistics like that, to be able to walk into this museum and to look at that. This is a cesspool for pedophilia, for child pornography, all of that. It cannot stand in one of our cities.
Scott Coulter joining us from the Danbury Institute. Scott, has anybody called the police? Have they been summoned to deal with this?
They have, yes. And we're very grateful for Tarrant County Judge Tim O'Hare, who's one of the senior elected officials in Tarrant County, has actually called on the Fort Worth Police Department to investigate this. A detective has been assigned. We're working with that group as well. But largely, this had not been exposed. This has been on display since the middle of November, and we just learned about it very recently. So this has been on display for some time. It's a traveling exhibit that moves to other museums around the country as well. If this can happen in Fort Worth, it can happen in any one of our cities. And so we talked to a registrar, a staff member from a sister museum in the area, and this person was not surprised at this type of imagery being exploited and exposed in a museum, but said they get away with it because people simply don't stand up and don't push back against this. So we're going to be the group that stands up and pushes back against it. We've opened up an open letter for people to sign on, religious leaders, Christians alike, to sign on and say, this cannot stand. We won't tolerate this in our city, in Fort Worth, or anywhere across this country.
Yeah, and by the way, folks, if you go to my website, toddstearns.com, we have a link to that letter. You can also go to danburyinstitute.org, and you can attach your name, affix your name to this letter as well. Scott, how many folks are we talking about that have signed this letter?
We've had hundreds of leaders from churches, pastors in the Metroplex in Dallas and Fort Worth, as well as from across the country, and we're approaching 1,000 signatures just over this weekend. We started this on Saturday. I worked on it Saturday and Sunday some, and of course today we're just ramping up some, so we expect this to garner a widespread support. It's well on its way so far.
All right. Wow. Well, I know we're going to have you on the Newsmax TV show later this afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern. Scott, we're going to leave it there. Appreciate you bringing this crazy story to our attention.
Thank you, Todd. Absolutely. Have a great day.
All right. Scott Coulter, everybody, from the Danbury Institute. And I couldn't even – I've seen the images. Those images are not going on my website. That's just all there is to it. It's disgusting. And it does make you wonder, aside from the fact that this museum is supporting pedophilia and possibly breaking the law, my question at this point would be, who are those children in the photographs? Who took those photographs? Those individuals need to be held accountable as well. Also, whether or not this museum is getting tax dollars, that remains unclear. We need to look into that. And if that's the case, we need to be defunding these pedophiles. All right. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. And again, we appreciate the Danbury Institute bringing that to our attention. I would encourage you to go and read our story we've got up on the website about that. I want to go to Webb in Portland, Maine, WLOB, our great affiliate there. Webb, what's going on?
Hi, Todd. I was very distressed to hear that you're not going to be on WLOB anymore. Could you give us some information as to why that happened or how that happened? I mean, you have a big listenership here.
Well, we do, and we love all of our great listeners there in Ray Richardson country. We love Ray. The new owner of the radio station wants to go in a different direction. And all I can tell you is that we were told a couple of weeks ago that our show would be taken off the air starting January 1, and we're going to be replaced by another program. They said it had absolutely nothing to do with the success of the show. And it's our understanding we're number one in the time slot. But it just has everything to do with the owner of the station wanting to go in a new direction. And so, Webb, my encouragement would be for all of you WLOB folks to call the radio station and, you know, let them know how you feel. I mean, if you guys want the show on the air there in Portland, you know, I think the owner of the station would be open to hearing that, I would hope.
Well, is this a George Soros owner? Do we know?
I don't. To be honest, I have no earthly idea. I don't think so, based on the programming they're wanting to put on. I'm fairly certain that's not it. But, you know, again, it's disappointing only because, Webb, I love hearing from you and Mike, so many of the other great callers from the Portland area. And that's one of the reasons we've been heavily promoting our app, so you guys can still listen to us, you know, on your iPhones. You can listen to us on the laptop or, you know, your desktop.
I see. Okay, Todd. Well, I'm sorry to see you go, and I hope we can get some kind of a way to bring you back.
Yeah, let's see what happens. You know, again, Ray is just a great fellow, and we love working with him, and we love hearing from you guys. And it's just a matter of, hey, call up the radio station and let them know. You know, a lot of times, you know, we take our radio stations for granted. And so then all of a sudden when a show gets pulled off or a change is made in programming, you know, everybody gets riled up. Well, it's important to let those radio stations know, you know, continuously, hey, we really like this show. We love the Todd Stearns show. And we want you to consider, you know, keeping it on the air. So let's see what happens. But Webb, you give us a holler back. And again, all of our, this is the very first radio station that actually signed up with us. And it's the only radio station we've ever lost in 7 years of doing this show. As a matter of fact, we have some exciting news coming next week for you folks in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're adding a brand new station to the Knoxville area, so that's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, again, WLOB listeners, yes, January 1st, we will be off the air in your town, but we want to encourage you, download our free app, and you'll be able to listen to us like nothing else has changed. All right, we got to take a quick break here, folks. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
I don't really like working.
I'm going to need a priority parking space.
I only work remotely.
How are your safe spaces?
Can I bring my dog to work?
Will your company protect me against microaggressions?
You're triggering me. Is this interview almost over?
You don't run a daycare. You run a business. So why use high-priced recruitment agencies who charge you up to 40% of an employee's first-year salary? So they're focused on getting you the costly talent, not the best fit, which means you get more of this.
What's your policy on paying employees to attend protests?
And I demand 8 weeks of vacation.
And I need at least 12 weeks of paid vacation.
I'm going to need a lot of mental health days.
Do you have a game room?
My pronouns are Z's and Z'er.
Isn't it time you hired grown-ups? Call redballoon.work and skip those high-priced recruitment agencies. Call 833-880-0600 for a free consultation. That's 833-880-0600 for a free consultation. Redballoon.work.
All right, well, Elon Musk has declared war on all of you MAGA folks out there who believe that we need to rein in the H-1B visas. Now, these are the immigration visas that are allowing a lot of people into this country to do jobs that should be going to American workers. And by and large, the jobs that are being given to these people, and by the way, India is overwhelmingly the top nation to get the H-1B visas. As a matter of fact, going back to fiscal year 2020, India got 319,494 H-1B visas. The closest one was China at 51,000. So this is predominantly an Indian issue, which I suspect, well, anyway, we'll get into more of that in just a little while. But I'm just curious here, where do you stand? Elon Musk over the weekend really went ballistic. Steve Bannon calling him a toddler for his response to all of this. But Musk liked a post that asserted Americans are, quote, too retarded to fill the country's tech workforce, and supported the idea that top roles should be taken up by better educated people from overseas. In response to all of that, one X user reposted a video of Musk from 2021 when he spoke about SpaceX. And Elon says, everyone's basically, without knowing it, they've got a mental straitjacket on. They'll work on optimizing the thing that should simply not exist. And talking about should not exist, we're talking about the controversy surrounding the H-1B visas. Now, all I can tell you here is that I believe President Trump and what he said back in 2016, and I don't believe that President Trump has wavered from this position, that there are big problems with this visa program. Elon Musk over the weekend said that to a MAGA supporter to go blank themselves. Wow, that was a little harsh. Over the weekend, I had a chance to go through and look at some of the jobs that were being made available to people from overseas. And we're not talking about these high-tech jobs. And look, hear me out on this. I know Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon have caused great controversy over the past week or so, and they're doubling down on what they said. And they're talking about how lazy American culture is. Okay, fine, I get that. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that, but what I can tell you is this, that the jobs being offered to people overseas are not high-tech positions. We're not looking for, and they're not hiring the scientist or any of these other folks. They're hiring, for example, secretaries, call screeners. Oh, maybe we should not. I'm just kidding. Hello, Todd Stern Show, please. All I want to know is why every time we call a call center, You can't understand what they're saying, which is why I love Patriot Mobile. They only hire American people to answer their calls right here in the good old U.S. of A. So the argument here coming from Elon Musk and others is that basically we don't have enough qualified people in America to do jobs. And therefore, we have to start bringing in foreign workers. And I'm just curious, how many of you have actually lost your job to a foreigner? Remember a couple of months ago, there was this guy from Disney, and he testified before Congress. The poor guy was just weeping, talking about how his job, they were all brought in, and they were told, we're getting rid of all of your jobs. You're all being laid off, and mostly white guys. And then they told the American workers, but you're going to have to train your replacements, and they were all coming from India. And then they said, and if you don't train your replacements, you're not going to get your severance package. So choose wisely. I mean, this is absolute insanity, ladies and gentlemen. Just absolute insanity. And it does make you wonder, how many Americans, well-qualified Americans, have been pushed aside to welcome in these Indians? Elon Musk says there's a dire shortage of talented and motivated engineers in the USA. Okay, fine. I don't believe that to be the case, but let's just, for the sake of the argument, say, okay, that's fine. So bring in engineers. But why are we bringing in taxi cab drivers? Right now, they are hiring people to teach individuals how to speak English in America from other countries. Really? We don't have any Americans that can do that? Is that what they're telling us? It seems to me the main problem here is the H-1B visa program is actually being used to punish well-qualified and highly skilled American workers. Now, what say you, ladies and gentlemen? 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Happy to have you with us today. Let's go to beautiful North Carolina, Winston-Salem. WSJS is our great affiliate there. Barry wants to weigh in on this H-1B situation. Hi, Barry. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for bringing me on. So I heard you. I didn't quite catch the whole narrative. I just caught a clip of, I guess you were talking about Elon and the H-1B visas. I heard you mention something about, you know, why are we bringing Indian people in to drive cabs? And so, you know, my background is I worked in IT recruiting for 20-plus years. So I have a lot of insight on to, you know, why these visas are necessary. Also have an opinion, obviously, about why there's so much controversy about it from Americans. And so the first thing I'll say is that without these H-1B visas, a lot of the technology, especially the enterprise technologies and the applications that we use, those things, we would not be leading the world in the development of those applications and those software if it were not for Indian and also Asian immigrants who come here and actually build those that technology for us.
So why do you think that is, Barry? Why are they not teaching the skills necessary for Americans to do that here on American soil?
That's exactly what it is. And so if you look at, like, the trend over the years in terms of, like, the number of Americans actually studying computer science, it's dropped significantly. Like, it's, and I'll tell you a funny anecdote. I was working, you know, I worked with a lot of big, large companies. And the funny thing was, you know, last year I was working with this manager. He was Indian. And, you know, we were trying to figure out how can we get more diversity into the pipeline. And what he meant by diversity was, you know, he straight up told me, he said, you know, we need more white people to, you know, to consider, you know, to be candidates for these jobs. And I thought, wow, that is the most ironic thing that I would expect to hear, right? And so I thought about it, and I was like, well, you know, he's not wrong. And so, yeah, it's basically an issue of supply and demand, right? American students are not taking up computer science. And the other thing I'll say is that, you know, these countries like India and China, it's a cottage industry. They see technology and the education and the discipline in those areas as a ticket out of their world into, you know, the United States, which for a lot of people, as we know, you know, this is the land of milk and honey for them. Like, if you make it onto this soil and you get a job here, you made it. And so we have taken for granted what it means to have expertise in these areas. They pay a lot of money. I can tell you that. And this is where I'll wrap up with you, that the money's insane. I can tell you that, you know, for a top five technology company in the state, these engineers are making $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 a year. And I'm not even talking about managing. And so it's an issue of supply and demand. And, you know, really, it's not a racial thing. It's just more, you know, these are the people
now,
who can come here and are
but
already happy.
Barry, let me push back a little bit. Let me push back on that, because there is a survey. One in six hiring managers have been told to stop hiring white men. Apple, for example, banned applicants from an entrepreneur camp based on race. Microsoft, they bragged that they pay white workers less than non-white workers. IBM hosting internships that ban white people, Asians, and men. So I'm wondering if I get it that maybe the schools aren't teaching to the levels, but as far as we're all the white guys, it looks to me like they're being intentionally left out in some of these cases.
Well, I'm going to push back on you on that narrative, because when it comes to, there's certain things.
Well, it's not a narrative. These are the facts.
Well, those are your facts.
No. I don't play that game here. No. We don't play that game. These are the facts. The survey conducted, Oracle, by the way, and we have all links to all of these stories on my website, but go ahead and finish your thought.
So I was going to say that, you know, as a black man, you know, who's worked in IT, I've seen it, you know, firsthand in terms of like how people are treated. But I can tell you that this is the one area where race is not really a factor. It's like if you have the knowledge, the education, you know how to program, you know how to architect, you know how to build these cloud applications, they want you. They don't really care that much. And in fact, most of the companies I work for, they put an emphasis on let's get more of these diverse candidates into the pipeline, including more white people.
No. But that's the problem here. But that's the problem, Barry, is that, you know, this is about race, because white people are intentionally being excluded. So if that's the case, then that's got to be addressed. I mean, because if you've got well-qualified white engineers and they're being denied positions for the sake of diversity, I got a problem with that.
All right, well, here's my challenge to you. Bring one white candidate onto your radio show and let them tell a story about how they've been discriminated against because they were white when it comes to being considered for a programming job. Just bring one white person on your show.
I'll do you better, Barry. I've got my social media feeds on X and Facebook are filled with those kinds of stories. So look, I understand where you're coming from here, and it very well may be the case that the education system is to blame. I also think, and Barry, I appreciate the call, I also think that another issue we've got to deal with is what mom and dad are doing at home with the kids. I mean, there's a reason why the Indian kids are winning all the Scripps National Spelling Bees. Are moms and dads doing what they need to be doing to instill a work ethic in their kids at home? But again, the way Elon and Vivek have framed all of this, it's making out like, you know, Americans are just lazy and stupid. And if you disagree with them, then you get punished. You get shoved aside on his social media feed. That's kind of strange. Let's go to Charles in Georgia, WDUN. All right, Charles, what's your story?
Hey, Todd, how you doing? I'm a Tennessean. Transplanted to Georgia. So I grew up in Germantown.
Great town.
Germantown High School. Yeah. So anyhow, I am a engineer, electrical engineer, and I've got experience in aerospace and space technology and a lot of other industrial stuff. And then come this past October, I got laid off. And
what I have found is that it is extremely challenging to find a position. A lot of times, if you know, they look at your LinkedIn profile, and I see a good old Southern white boy there, and you get passed by. And I don't have any definitive proof that it's being taken by H-1B visas, but the company I just came from, I was a minority within that company, but it was there was probably 30% of the people there are H-1B visas, a lot of Indian and a lot of Hispanics, and some of those were not as motivated as you would think, especially some of these people that have been calling in and saying how great they are. And they're not necessarily always that motivated. There's always some American-born engineers that are just as ambitious, if not even more. So I kind of look at it as it's a big problem to just blanketly say that we need H-1B visa brought in.
We've actually got, when you go on to the job, you know, the job offerings on the H-1B visa program, you've got store clerks at 7-Eleven. You're telling me that we can't find a single American citizen who won't work at a 7-Eleven as a store clerk? I find that very hard to believe. I mean, it's really shocking when you see the numbers of jobs. And by the way, it's not just happening in states like California or New York. We're talking about Tennessee, for example, another big state, Georgia, a very large state that you guys are bringing in all these H-1B visa applicants. So it's a big deal. And Charles, I'm sorry to hear that happened to you. But again, your story is not unusual. Charles, thank you for the call. This was the headline, by the way, in the New York Times. Pink slips at Disney, but first training foreign replacements. This was from 2015, when employees who kept up the data systems were all summoned in, about 250. They were all gathered together. They were told, you're going to be laid off. Many of the jobs were transferred to immigrants on temporary visas for highly skilled technical workers, who were brought in by an outsourcing firm based in India. Over the next 3 months, some Disney employees were required to train their replacements to do the jobs they had lost. One worker in his 40s said, I couldn't believe they could just fly people in to sit at our desks and take over our jobs. It was so humiliating to train somebody else to take over your job, I still can't grasp it. Disney said the layoffs were part of a reorganization. I bet it was. Let's go to Rick, North Carolina, WSJS. Rick, what's your story?
Good morning, Todd. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and have a happy and safe New Year.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Sure. I used to work for the world's largest telecommunications corporation, and we did a job known as technical consulting, which is basically a sales engineer working with large systems of telephone equipment, central office, as well as cellular equipment. And one day in 2001, we came into our office, and all of a sudden, we could not log on to our computer. We were told that everybody's job was being eliminated, all the engineers, all the technical consultants, and the place was shutting down. It was moving overseas. I believe it went to the Philippines. Now, I had 24 years service with the company, so I did not have enough time to retire with a full pension. And you can imagine the range of emotions people felt when that happened. And it was not a matter of diversity. We had engineers from Nigeria. We had a female engineer from Lithuania. We had African Americans. We had a varied workforce, a diverse workforce. But I think the bottom line is, back in those days, we were making, I don't mind saying it, 23 years ago, about $65,000 to $70,000 a year as an engineer, a sales engineer. Those people that took our jobs started out making around a third to a half of what we were making. And I think all this is because of corporate greed. I don't think they care. They don't care about Americans, no matter who they are, whether they're from overseas or born in this country. The corporations are greedy. They look after the executives. They want the stocks to be driven up. And that's my story. I mean, it was just devastating. And it's, you know, when you're in a position for 24 years and you're in your late 40s, it's hard to find another job, as you can well imagine.
I mean, you have to start over, and you're right. It's so hard at that age to start over. To your point, in this New York Times piece, and again, this has been going on for a long time. Back in 2015, Howard University said the program creates a highly lucrative business model of bringing in cheap H-1B workers to substitute for Americans. And you're right, these companies are taking full advantage of it. But according to the federal guidelines, those visas were supposed to be strictly intended for foreigners who had advanced science or computer skills. That was it. But now it's like an international zip recruiter, Rick.
Well, we had people, you know, we had very talented engineers that had master's degrees from Clemson, places like MIT, things like that. So they weren't dummies. And the company just wanted to basically eliminate people's jobs, like I say, pay someone less who went to school in India or wherever. And just, you know, it's really frustrating because customers didn't like it either. The customers were like, what are you doing to us? Why are you getting rid of this whole department, these whole departments of these people we worked with for years? The customers were located, of course, in the United States. We didn't have really any international customers, but the customers were upset about it. But upper management's like, there's nothing you can do. You know, Rick is not going to be your person any longer. It's going to be whoever, you know. Mm. And it's just a sad state of affairs when it's all based on the almighty bottom dollar that they just don't want to pay us. And, you know, if you look at $65,000 or $70,000 23 years ago, you'd have to be making, what, maybe $110,000, $120,000 now.
Yeah.
You know, to equal that purchasing power. And those kind of jobs, they just don't want to pay that. They don't want to pay $120,000 a year to a technical consultant / engineer. They just want to get by as cheaply as they can.
Rick, I'm curious. So what happened? What did you decide to do after all of that?
Well, it was a long story. I had to kind of refocus my energies and go into financial planning. I had to go work at an office where we help people set up 401ks for their company. We also offered individual counseling for people, you know, to set up their retirement. But that was totally unlike, you know, if I hadn't had a friend in the business, then I probably wouldn't have gotten a chance to do that. But around this area, you know, in North Carolina, there just were not any jobs paying that 23 years ago that I could have gone to, because all the telephone companies and all the suppliers, but a lot of them had just gone out of business or they were downsizing themselves. So there was nowhere to turn to. Mm. And it's just, you know, it leads a person to frustration. You get some, you know, harmful thoughts sometimes because you're thinking, what am I going to do? I've got a wife and two young boys or two teenagers at the time. You know, how am I going to support them? You know, it's kind of sad.
Rick, I'm glad things ended up working out well for you there. But again, you're right. It's something that no American should have to go through. And I've got a big problem with this. I really do. And look, in the MAGA movement, and Rick, thank you for the call. In the MAGA movement, you're not going to agree all the time on everything. That doesn't mean that Elon Musk or Vivek are the enemy, right? But it also, from Vivek and Elon's position, it doesn't mean that we're the enemy either. In my mind, America first means putting Americans first. And if we do not do that, hear me on this, the Democrats will win the midterms. All right, got to take a break. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, let's go to Mike in Salem, Oregon, radio station KYKN. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Todd. Good to talk to you again. You know, I've just been listening, and I totally agree with you on this Americans first thing. And something that I haven't heard mentioned is the combination of things that has transpired to create this issue is the fact that not only have they purposely started dumbing down our children in school, I remember when I started working, I was 14 years old working for a day labor service. And I'm 60 now, I've been working for over 40 years. And then on top of that, they started handing out welfare just to anybody that asked for it. As people started living on welfare for free, not having to work, not learning the responsibilities of getting up and taking care of your family. And I think between the combination of that and what they've done in our schools has created almost an unreversible situation in bringing back people, because now Americans have gotten so lazy because they want everything handed out for free. And I think that's a big reason why they have allowed all these immigrants to come in here and take the jobs, because they're willing to come up here and work, and then they don't have to pay them as much. They don't have to pay the taxes.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, look, Mike, to your point, and man, I hate to cut you off, Mike, because you're making a great point, but we got to run for the break. I'm going to pick up this conversation on the other side of the news here, but you're right. This, something's going on here, and they're fattening us all up for a very specific reason. And I'll tell you what that is coming up next.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of the Big Show. Great to have you with us. By the way, we're getting information out. President Carter's state funeral set for January the 9th. And it is going to be chaos in Washington, D.C. You've got the new Congress coming in. We'll be voting on the Speaker of the House on January 3rd. Then you've got the Carter will be lying in state. And you're going to have the funeral January 9th, also a national day of mourning. And Biden ordering our flags to be flown at half staff for 30 days, which, by the way, I'm already getting the emails. It is not a conspiracy to attack Trump. That is standard protocol. So just hang tight on that one. I want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Say hello to our good friend from Santa Clarita, California, Joe Messina. Joe, how are you? Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, Todd. Thanks for having me on and looking forward to a great new year.
I'm curious. We were talking about Jimmy Carter in the last hour, and a lot of our listeners remembered what it was like back in the 1970s with the gas lines and having to turn the thermostat down to 55. Do you remember those days?
I was a what was called a lot boy at a car dealer, and I had to go fill up those cars or put gas in those cars so they could be driven. He was a wonderful president, was he not? Hey, Todd, let me take you back a little further, though. I remember when he was on the Sumter County School Board, and he would not allow, and it's public record, he would not allow a high school being built for black kids to be built on the same side of the street as the white kids, because they might bump into each other. That's a true story.
It's a really weird thing, you know, because back in the, you know, he was really wishy-washy in a lot of his positions. You know, he'd be, you know, anti-racism one day, pro-racism the next. It was very strange.
Apparently didn't get his medication right back then. I don't know.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Insane. Hey.
I'm sorry.
Joe, we are looking at... Yeah. An inner family squabble, I guess, in MAGA world. You've got Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, and really standing in opposition to President Trump's original position on the H-1B visas. And now you've got Speaker Mike Johnson, President Trump having to come out earlier today and saying that he fully supports Mike Johnson as Speaker of the House. What's going on here? Are we looking at some rifts, or are these just temporary squabbles?
Well, I think the MAGA squabble, I think that's a family squabble, right? They had some ideas of what they believed to be true. And I've got to tell you, I've worked in the technology world for 25 years, and some great people come out of other countries when it comes to the technologies and the sciences. And we have done a poor job at educating our kids in those areas. So I kind of see where they're saying, you know, we got some great people coming from there, but I think this is short-lived. I really do believe that, and I think that that, again, if we get education back on track, we won't have a need for the DEI garbage that goes on. So I don't think this is going to really affect the relationship all three of those guys have. The Mike Johnson thing, though, bothers me tremendously. Being a Christian myself, and, you know, when he came out of the shoot, it was about prayer. It was about putting God first. It was all this stuff. And then all of a sudden you start looking at what he's doing and the things he's fighting. And in that last horrendous bill that came out, I mean, he didn't even know. This was a bill he was touting at, what, 1,500 pages, Todd? Todd, I can't read 1,500 pages in a month, let alone in, you know, 24 hours. And, you know, coming out with that bill, and he didn't even know what was in the bill when it came to the perks that the Congress was getting, that the House was getting. And that bothers me tremendously. So when Trump gets behind him, the way I'm looking at this, he doesn't see an alternative, right? Who would step up? Who would be the second guy in line for the seat?
It's a fair question, and I wonder if, and some of Trump's thinking here is that when Trump does step up, Mike Johnson backs down. And so maybe Trump is taking all that in consideration and said, yeah, you know what? He may not be the strongest leader, but when I tell him to do something, he's going to do it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And once Trump gets at the head of that and he's pulling people along with him, I hate to put it this way because I don't want to make him sound like a dictator, but people will fall in line to help get the job done. You need a leader. You need somebody that's going to look back just like they do in the military and go, look, I don't care how you feel about this. This is the direction we're going in. Now saddle up and let's get out of here. And I think that's going to be Trump's attitude.
This is interesting. There's a piece on Mediaite, and I know President Trump well enough to say what I'm about to say. It was about 2 weeks ago when I started really looking at Elon Musk inserting himself into photos and videos, being at Mar-a-Lago 24/7, and I thought to myself, I wonder how Trump really feels about that, because Trump is the man, and Elon Musk is trying to make himself the man, and the visuals and the optics are just sort of weird. There's a piece of Mediaite that just came out about 30 minutes ago. Trump is annoyed. Insiders say shadow president Elon Musk starting to irritate Trump. I'm kind of believing this. You know, it's hard. It's hit or miss with Mediaite, but I can see where Trump might possibly be getting annoyed by all of this.
You know, Todd, being one of those kids at times too in high school when you want to be picked to play with the big boys, you know, pick me kind of thing, and then you get picked and you don't even know how to control yourself. And I know this is going to sound weird. I think that's what's going on with Elon to a degree. He's got a voice now, a real voice. He did with Twitter. He does with Twitter. But now he's in there. He's in with the game. He's having direct influence with the guy making the decision and people around him. So I'm not so sure. I think he knows he has some power. He knows he has some juice. But I just think he's overly excited at this point in time. He just wants to be involved in everything. And we'll see how it plays out. Todd, I was not a big fan of his in his early days. And I have, you know, not personal reasons, but he took very much advantage of government. He did what he should have done. He took advantage of government grants and programs and what have you, and that was great. But I said, hey, how about give it a little back? And now I see what he's doing. I've read more about him, and so I'm not an over-the-top fan of his, but I see he's trying to do the right thing. But I think he's just excited to be with the boys. You know what I'm
well,
saying?
Well, here's the deal. This guy, he supported Obama. He supported Hillary in 2016. He supported Biden. And now all of a sudden he's a Trump guy. And I always look at those kinds of folks with great suspicion. And the reality here is Elon's going to do what is good for Elon. That's what he's doing here.
Ultimately, you're right. Yep.
And I think that's one of the reasons why it shocked a lot of people, you know, in the MAGA orbit, Steve Bannon for one, when Elon came out so ferociously in support of the H-1B visas. By the way, Susie Wiles, last night, Susie Wiles sent out a transition-wide memorandum on social media use. The memo forbids members of the incoming administration and transition from making any comments on social media without prior approval from the incoming White House counsel, which is a smart thing. I will say this. Trump, have you noticed? We haven't really heard much from Trump publicly. in what, a couple of weeks at least now.
Yeah, I know. I have noticed that. I thought it was his Christmas message was fantastic.
Sure was.
I thought it was. I never heard anybody talk about Jesus Christ so much as president, vice president, or somebody at that level. As far as his messages on Jimmy Carter, I know I've got a lot of negative things to say about Jimmy Carter, but, again, a human being. He was a grandfather. A lot of people loved him. So hearts and prayers go out to their family on 100 years old. My God, he had a full life. But, as far as Trump goes, I think that maybe they're saying to him, look, let's get in there and then go to town on this stuff. Because some of the comments and the things that he was making ahead of time is why Congress was working overtime or the House or the Senate was working overtime to thwart his ability to do certain things. And I'm sitting here, like you, probably chomping at the bit going, stop. Stop telling them what you're going to do. You won. Be quiet and make it happen after you get in there.
Yeah, I just think we've got to get this border situation under control. Tom Homan, I think, is going to come in day one, and he's going to start cracking heads. And we've got to be prepared for that, and I think we have to really prepare our audiences for that as well, because the firestorm coming from the media is – it's remember, Elian Gonzalez back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's that's the level of the media coverage we're going to be dealing with.
Oh yeah, and they're going to focus on the families. They're going to focus on how the family is being pulled apart. You're going to see a lot of things with the kids crying and reaching out for their mommy who actually isn't there in the picture to begin with. Yeah, you're going to see a lot of that happening. I agree with you. I think we need to lay the narrative every hour on the hour on our shows.
All right, Joe, got big plans for New Year's Eve. Do you do the big celebration?
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the thing that my dad used to call it amateur's night. So I'm going to stay home with my wife and watch some great little movies and just ring in the new year with the person I love the most.
Oh, I love that. Well, and by the way, you really you kicked outside your coverage, my friend. I met Mrs. Messina. Wow.
Yeah. That was a gift. Someday when you have the time, I'll tell you the story, but that was definitely a gift from God.
All right, next time I'm out in California, we're going to have to do dinner, and I got to hear the story.
Yep. You'll
right.
love it.
Joe Messina.
All right, God bless, man.
All right, God bless. Happy New Year, Joe. All right, good man right there. And his wife is absolutely lovely and just a great, great couple. All right, hang tight. We're going to go to your calls. Got to take a quick break here. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right. As promised, let's get right to the phones. Let's go to Sean in North Carolina. WSIC wants to weigh in on Elon and H-1B. Hey, Sean, what you got for us?
Hey, Todd, how are you?
All right, good. Thanks for asking.
Good. Okay, I'm going to get to it as quick as I can so I can, get out of the way. But I called Jeff and I talked to Jeff on Friday about this whole thing with Elon, and I'm like really, really mad at this guy. Okay, instead of handing people visas, why don't we go back, since he has all this money and all this power and all this nonsense, why don't we go back and find out all the businesses, small business owners like myself that were destroyed through this whole thing with COVID? Why don't we get those people back up and running before we start handing new people anything? Because I'll be honest with you, we need to just flush the toilet and get rid of everybody that came here illegal. Get rid of you. You got to go. We have to rebuild the way that we were running on Trump. Trump was the best. I had three great years out of my business, and that was under Trump. We need to get back to that, rebuild our country. A lot of those businesses that were forced to fold should be brought back, and people should be helped out. Give them the grants, give them the loans, give them the money, let them run the show, let them get back up and running. Because I'll be honest with you, my son, I don't know if he's going to go to college. It'd be nice if there was a trade school that we once used to put our kids either in trade school or we send them to college. But when I was 19, and I just want to throw this out there, and I don't know if anybody would believe me, but it's true. I don't know if you know about the Grand Hyatt in New York City, but when Trump bought that building, I was 19. I helped put those three flagpoles up over Sixth Avenue.
Is that right?
And I was 19. Yes, I was 19. I actually helped design the footings with a guy that ran the company. His name was Algonquin Flags. We did that job, And the guy was so impressed on how young and how smart I was and articulate. He was like, I don't know, where were you? You know, well, he is being 19 and you know what you're doing. And it's like, it's just common sense. You know, I was always good with my hands and that's what I do now. I'm a carpenter. I could build things from the ground up, but this is what we're missing in this country with everything of all this nonsense. You know, like the guy was saying, nobody wants to work.
Look, here's Sean, let me jump in here for a minute, because this has been an issue for me for a very, very long time. And every major problem we are facing in this country goes back to our education system. And I remember when I was in high school and middle school and high school, you could actually have, if you did not want to go to college, you could go into the trades. You could go into the trade arts. Whether or, for example, we had a Votex campus on our high school campus, so you could spend half the day going to math class or whatever and algebra, and then you can go over and you could learn how to become a welder or a mechanic. In the later years, they were starting to develop computer science courses. We have got to get back to educating our kids. Enough of the whole DEI pronoun crap. We've got to get back to the basics, and it's home economics, it's business classes, teaching kids how to balance their checkbooks. Am I going down the wrong path here, Sean?
No, you're totally right. And this is the thing that I totally regret with what I did when I helped put those flagpoles up. Because long story short, our go-to through Mr. Trump, he actually offered us a letter of recommendation, which at the time I was young and stupid, but the guy turned around, looked at my boss, and then he looked at all of us. He said, he goes, don't take this out of context. And he said to all of us in that elevator that day, he said, he goes, if you ever want a job to work for my boss, you let us know. He would hire you after what he just saw you guys do and how professional you are. And you know what? Kind of kicking myself, I didn't take that one up either.
That's it. There you go. Sean, thank you for that call. Appreciate that. Dylan, did you watch any of the football games over the weekend?
I caught the highlights, yeah.
I watched the Liberty Bowl, and it was good. I thought Memphis was well represented, but the Liberty Bowl needs a makeover.
It definitely does.
We got to get like a big-name musical act. I mean, Memphis is known for music, right? So we got to get a big-name musical act at halftime. We just kind of got – and here's the reason I say that. I think the coolest bowl game of all, it's the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
It is. It's so true. That Pop-Tart just coming out of the toaster like
no,
that?
No, but did you see what happened? They came out fully wrapped, and then they, like, disrobed. The Pop-Tarts disrobed.
Oh, no. Was it an unfrosted Pop-Tart?
No, they had the sheet. You know when you get a Pop-Tart, and yes, it's got the little aluminum thing?
Yes.
So they kind of, like, in a very sensual way, the Pop-Tart, you know, revealed itself.
Oh, boy.
And then it was like, then they sacrificed the Pop-Tart into the giant toaster, and it
had to be done.
It had to have been done. But then later it was resurrected and they were singing the Hallelujah Chorus. People are really, the Christians are very upset at this. How dare Pop-Tarts? They're mocking the resurrection. I don't think they were. But the implication is that the Pop-Tart, the dead Pop-Tart is now, well, really the toasted Pop-Tart is now an angel.
I wouldn't even say that the Pop-Tart dies when it goes into the toaster. I think it kind of upgrades.
In all seriousness, there were some theologians. How dare you? Who do you people think you are? That's a Pop-Tart. It's not Jesus. Right. Okay.
Come on.
It's got a delicious strawberry filling. That's my favorite. Some people like the cinnamon roll. Anyway, so all that to say, I think the Pop-Tarts Bowl, setting aside the resurrection, has really kind of raise the bar when it comes to these bowl games, right? I'm just saying. I could go for a Pop-Tart, though. Well done. Well done, Pop-Tarts Bowl. All right, hang tight. Got to take a break. 901-260-5926. That's our number. 901-260-5926. Was it an unleavened Pop-Tart? Yeah, that makes sense. Perplexed here. Maybe you could help me out, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a big coffee guy. I love community coffee. Our staff here, they're The staff, they happen to be coffee snobs. I just only drink community coffee. But they're like drinking all this other kind of stuff, this coffee. But I'm a community coffee guy. Family-owned place down in New Orleans. I recommend the pecan praline flavor. So anyway, there is a black-centric coffee shop in Memphis. And Dylan, at first glance, I thought that meant they only served black coffee. But I think it means they only serve black people. And I'm kind of taken aback by this. I thought we had a civil rights movement to clarify all of this.
Yeah.
Clearly, I was wrong. The name of the coffee, and by the way, the coffee shop, instead of the O, it's an X, like Malcolm X. So I think they're like radicals. Like, this is where the Black Panthers go to get their, you know, cup of Joe. Anyway, the owner of a black-centric Memphis coffee shop has become a victim of crime. And that's a terrible thing. We don't want anybody to suffer with crime. The poor guy was robbed twice in 1 week. Terrible. They stole a stove. Who does that? The name of the coffee company is called the Anti-Gentrification Coffee Club, and Coffee Black is the name of the place. It's a little wordy, but the anti-gentrification is very important. So I did a little bit of research on these folks, and they have a mission to return coffee to a tool that is actually empowering for black and brown people. Bartholomew Jones is the owner of Coffee Black, telling WMC-TV he's going to stay in business in spite of the break-ins. Good for you, sir. I like that spirit. We're not going to let the thugs get us down. There was another story, though, about the Anti-Gentrification Coffee Club, and this really caught my interest. It turns out that the owner has had a big problem with all of you white folks moving into the neighborhood. But he didn't call them white folks, right? He used code. Dylan, he said that he has a problem with people in his neighborhood who own poodles and shop at Whole Foods.
Oh, boy.
We all know what that's code for.
Uh-huh.
Somebody said, I have a French bulldog. Does that count? Yeah, you're way too white. So anyway, the guy goes on. He did an interview back in 2022 with the Memphis Flyer, which is sort of like a lefty magazine. And he said, talking about creating this black coffee shop, what if we created a place for us by us? That's code for no honkies. What would that look like? Well, it would not be white. I can tell you that much, sir. Could we return coffee to a tool that is actually empowering for black and brown people and something that supports our neighborhood? He also told the Memphis Flyer that coffee at his shop is pay what you can. Oh, that never works out. That will never work out, sir. He says it's free for neighbors who need it. I'm just wondering, if I walked in to the coffee joint and I actually asked, I got to have some coffee. I don't have a dollar. Would they give me a cup of coffee? I don't know about that. Anyway, he said that, so it's all about free. So if you don't have the money, he will give it to you free. And so this is my problem with the whole story now. Now that I know the backstory here, this is my problem with the story, Dylan. If that's true, that they're just helping neighbors in need, why did they call the cops when they got robbed, not once, but twice? I mean, just think about this. Maybe, just maybe, the guys that broke into their coffee shop didn't have a stove, and they needed a stove. So at that point, using his rationale, he should have said, here, take my stove. Would you like a cup of coffee?
Technically, it wasn't stolen then, right?
Exactly. Oh, jeez.
Come on.
Wow. All right. I wonder if they have cream. What happens if you ask for cream?
There's no lattes being served.
Don't you dilute the blackness of the coffee, sir, you racist. Actually, I do take my coffee straight up black, so I don't know. Coffee power. No, I can't do that. All right, let's go to the phones here. 901-260-5926. Let's say hello to Dennis, WTJS, our great affiliate in West Tennessee, who wants to talk about President Carter. Hi, Dennis. What you got for us?
Good morning.
or good afternoon. Got a couple of things about Carter. Both of them happened at a family reunion. My daddy had 10 brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And we were always big on reunions and family matters and all, but we was at a family reunion, and this was the whole weekend where we went up on Friday and left Sunday after we had a church service. And we played dominoes and different things, you know, Friday night and Saturday night and all. But we was talking about Carter, and one of my uncles made the statement that he may have not been a good president, but he was the best ex-president we'd ever had. And I spoke up and told him, I said, we have never elected a ex-president. Years later, Obama was in president, and we were in a family reunion, and was talking about how bad Obama was as a president. And I think I made the statement that one thing that Obama did was move Carter out of the worst president status. And one of my cousins spoke up, and he was high up in a airline, and you would recognize the airline if I told you who it was. He was, I don't know whether he was vice president or what, but he was up there. And he said, I don't know, I can remember under Carter when the interest was a nearly 10%. And they were having, you know, rich people use borrowed money to make money. Industry uses borrowed money to make money. You know, us peons loan it to them, and they use it to invest and make money. They were having to give 10% or close to it under Carter. So just thought you might find that interesting.
Dennis,
we have never elected an ex-president, and it doesn't make any difference how good he is or was after he was president. He's known as the president. And he is known as, if not the worst, one of the worst.
Well, no, he was the worst up until Joe Biden. So now he passed away as the second worst president in American history. But I was just a little fella at the time, but I remember, you know, the chaos and really the depression that, you know, that inflicted this country during his presidency. And it was a terrible, terrible time. He had no business being president of the United States, none whatsoever. Dennis, thank you for that call. Let's go to Brandon in Portland, Maine. WLOB wants to weigh in on the Postal Service. Brandon, what's going on?
Hey, Todd, thanks for taking my call. So I've been a rural carrier for 17 years. Just going to try to get to the point real quick here. So our pay scale stops at 9.6 hours a day. My evaluated time is 13 hours a day. So approximately 25% of the work I do every single day, I will never get paid for. And it's not just my route. This is going on across the country. I just think that, you know, just trying to get the word out there, because so many people that I run into and talk to absolutely have no idea that this is, you know, even a problem or even a thing. I've tried filing a grievance with the union, and it gets nowhere. You know, it's kind of like slavery. You know, you work for free. You know,
it's a sad thing that's happening in this country, Brandon. It really is, and there is such a thing as corporate greed. Under the Constitution, you're allowed to be greedy. I think it goes back, you know, that in itself goes back to the spiritual condition of our country. And I think that as a business owner, that you have certain responsibilities. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people, they don't share that same value system with me. And again, is it immoral? Well, if you're, you know, it depends if you're a person of faith or not. You know, that's where you're, you know, what's your morality based on? So it's really sad, but not terribly surprising. Brandon, thank you for that call, and thank you for listening to us on WLOB. All right, let's go to Rocco in Georgia, WDUN. Hi, Rocco. What's going on?
Hey, afternoon, Todd. I'm proud to say that at 18 years old in 1980, I cast my first vote
against Jimmy Carter and for Ronald Reagan.
Is that right?
Exactly. And I lived here in Georgia my entire life, and we knew what he was way back when. But the point I called about was I'm watching the coverage of all this, and they're talking about how Jimmy Carter was a man of peace and all the things that he did, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize. And then later on in that broadcast, oh, by the way, we're sending – Joe Biden is sending another $2.5 billion to Ukraine to keep that war going. In the same breath, they're talking about Jimmy Carter, all he did to stop war. Do you think Joe Biden will ever have to make room on his mantle at his beach house for a Nobel Peace Prize?
That's a fair question. I will say,
I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's just it's and yesterday when Biden got up there was talking about Jimmy Carter, he couldn't help but bring up Bo Biden. It doesn't matter what the situation is, he brings Bo Biden in everything, and I just don't understand it.
In this particular instance, I'm gonna give Biden a pass, and here's the reason why: because Bo Biden had brain cancer, Jimmy Carter, of course, suffering from brain cancer, and the family, the Carter family, had been really just racked with. I think his siblings all died fairly young because they too came down with cancer. So I think in this instance that would have been an appropriate mention, and I went back and listened to it, and I get it, but again, when you look at the presidency of Jimmy Carter and the pain that he inflicted on so many Americans, it's tragic, and you, now you have all this revisionist history, and that's my big problem here, Ronco, is I don't like the revisionist history. Talk about the good, the bad. You can talk about the humanity of the man. I got no problem with that. But, you know, the fact is that did he really deserve that Nobel Peace Prize?
Well, he earned it after he was out of office.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just it's a total contradiction to say, hey, we're sending another $2.5 billion to Ukraine to keep that war going. That's the only reason they're doing it. And then we're talking about Jimmy Carter being stopping wars. You know what I mean? Why don't somebody say, hey, wait a minute. Why don't we stop the spigot of money to Ukraine?
What, a couple of more $1 billion, by the way, going to Ukraine. That news came out just a little while ago. So they are literally cleaning out the bank accounts before Donald Trump takes over. Rocco, I got to go, my friend. Good hearing from you. Folks, we talk about what's happening with the economy. And I want to encourage you as you go into 2025 to take a long, hard look at where your money is invested. And if it's all in the stock market, you need to think about that really hard. My recommendation is to diversify your retirement plan, your savings, whatever you're trying to do. You need to diversify into physical gold, silver, and platinum. And that's why my friends at Priority Gold are really, really anxious to talk to you. Priority Gold, they make it very easy to diversify. You got to act now, though, and this is not some sort of a pressure thing. They just want to send you a free gold investor guide. They've got two decades of experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and they want to send you a free gold investor guide. Now, folks, if you're following the numbers, gold already up 21% this year and still climbing. And so this is a great opportunity to take a long, hard look at your retirement plans. By the way, if you're a young person, maybe you just got some Christmas money, might be a good idea for you to take a look at investing in gold as well. So here's what I want you to do. Write this number down. Text the word GOLDEN to 24999. That's GOLDEN to 24999. You're going to get a free gold investor guide, and it's not going to be a pressure sale here, folks. That's not how Priority Gold operates. They want to educate you first, and then you can make a smart decision. So again, text the word GOLDEN to 24999. We'll be right back. All right, folks. next. Don't forget, 5 o'clock Eastern, the Todd Stern Show on Newsmax 2. Hope you would tune in and watch the program tonight. Let's go to the phone lines. WLOB Diane is on the line. Hi, Diane. What's going on?
Tell me it ain't so, Todd, and I'm using the word ain't.
Oh, dear. Yes. Diane. Yes, now I did get a word here. I got a message that the change in programming doesn't happen until January 6th, but it is going to happen, and it's really out of our hands. There's nothing we can do.
I'm fit to be tied. Yeah. I can't even talk right now. I can't believe WLOB has taken one of the best, if not the best, conservative talk show host off my channel here. I just can't believe it.
Well, you're very kind to say that, Diane. Now, the good news is we have an app, so you can listen to, you can download the app. It's free, or you can just go to, you can listen to us online. So if you go to toddstearns.com, you'll be able to listen to the show. But I'm going to miss, you know, the voices like yours, Diane, and we've had some Webb, Mike, so many folks from across Maine. You guys have become like part of the family.
Well, I have three things to say, Todd. I have three things to be grateful for. My daughter gets to live her life, that the American people woke up and voted Donald John Trump into office for the third time, and that I get occasionally to talk to the greatest talk show host in my lifetime. Happy New Year, Todd. I'm going to miss you terribly.
Diane, Happy New Year. Now, you keep listening, and I want you to, you know, we're going to figure this out. You know, and you got to call the radio station and let them know. And that goes to all of our, you know, main listeners. Call the radio station. Be nice. Be polite. They're good, kind people. I kind of think they're making the wrong decision here, but give them a call and say, hey, we want the Todd Stern Show on. And, you know, we're going to do our part as well to do that, Diane.
Every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, I'm going to call. There are plenty of people that I talk to that hear you, that hear me. I know they're listening. Please, everyone out there, call. Call WLOB now. Please, everybody.
Well, we love all of our great affiliates around the country, and I know we're adding, I think, 5 or 6 new stations just in the first quarter of this year. So we're growing, and we're excited about it, and we're certainly disappointed, but who knows? Things have a change, you know, nothing's written in stone, as they say. But Diane, God bless you. Thank you for those kind words, and thank you for calling it. You know what I'm going to miss, Dylan? I know nobody in Maine says they have an accent, but I love their accent.
Me too.
Of course, they say that we've got an accent down here, but I'm like, what accent? What are you talking about?
Nah, we're just good Southerners.
So anyway, we love all of you guys out there. And I want to say thank you, because we're not part of the big corporate conglomerate, right? We're a mom and pop radio program, and we fight for every single one of our listeners, and we're proud to do that. All right, folks, tomorrow, it's New Year's Eve, and guess what? We're going to be live on the radio. We're going to have a lot of fun. Be sure to check in tomorrow. Be good, America.